From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the National Review is reporting that Joe Biden has made what appears to be his first major move to the left in his 2020 bid for president, which, given where he started, must be a bit difficult. But what is the move? We'll talk about it with North Carolina Congressman Ted Budd. And a just-released survey of students on college campuses across the United States suggests that the future of the First Amendment could be in jeopardy. A slight majority, 53% to 46% of students, say protecting free speech rights is more important in promoting an inclusive and welcoming society that restricts speech, just slightly. I'll talk with Nico Perino, the communications director for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And my plan is to open up the phone lines so that you can weigh in on today's topics. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Hey, looking for a summer vacation that you're sure to remember? Well, there's still a few spots left on our trip to Alaska. We're taking a cruise to Alaska July the 7th through the 14th. My wife and I, along with several of the FRC team, will be with me. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, General Jerry Boykin, and former Ambassador Ken Blackwell will be with me. We're going to have a great time. Not only will you be able to see the magnificent scenery of Alaska, but you'll enjoy great fellowship with like-minded conservatives, and you'll get a behind-the-scenes look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now and what's ahead. To find out more how you can join us, hurry, you got to do it quickly, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Okay, in what may be his first major move to the left. Now, he's been creeping to the left since he has been toying with running for president. But Joe Biden, who's now the Democratic frontrunner, has endorsed repealing the Hyde Amendment. Now, this is a measure that's been in place since shortly after the Supreme Court imposed abortion on demand on the nation. And this is simply prohibits federal funding of abortion except in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is endangered. Joining me now to talk about this National Review story is Congressman Ted Budd, who represents the 13th District of North Carolina and serves on the Financial Services Committee, perhaps most relevant to our discussion. He was a signatory on the May 8th letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy in support of the Hyde Amendment. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you. I appreciate you and all your listeners and honored to be one of your True Blue Award recipients. Appreciate what you do to hold Congress accountable. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ted, and thank you for being True Blue. Let me play a clip here so people hear firsthand what Joe Biden had to say. Now, this was an exchange between an ACLU volunteer and Joe Biden at a campaign stop, which was posted on May the 8th. Now, here's the clip.
I'm an ACLU Rights for All voter, and I have one quick question for you, and that is, will you commit to abolishing the Hyde Amendment, which hurts poor women and
yes,
women of color?
Yes, and by the way, ACLU member, I got a near-perfect voting record my entire career.
I heard you did, but I'm glad you just said you would commit to abolishing the Hyde Amendment.
Right now, it has to be. It can't stay.
Thank you.
Congressman, are you surprised by this flip-flop on the Hyde Amendment, given Joe Biden, who had always kind of held himself out as to be moderate, middle of the road on abortion, never saying that taxpayers should be forced to fund it, now completely flipping?
Really three things I'm thinking here. One is kind of like, you know, you used to say, this is not your father's Oldsmobile. This is really not your grandfather's Democrat Party anymore. This is a party of increasing extremism. So that's really what's going on there. And he's got to, the ACL, the second thing is that the ACLU was doing with the person with the recording there was forcing his hand to really shift left. And Joe was more than willing to do it because he realized the old tactic of moving to the extremes of your party and then trying to moderate later. But with this party, I don't think he could moderate if he were to win. So he's got to shift left to clear the field. He's in a field of 20, 22 different people that are coming out of the woodwork to run, and each of them are racing harder and harder to the left. So that's really what he's doing. He's trying to clear the field, be the dominant player, and to do that, unfortunately, in this political season among the Democrats, you've got to be to the extreme left, and that's just what he tipped his hand to do.
It's interesting. I think you're very perceptive. I think you're absolutely right. When the ACLU are trying to pin him down, get him on the record, that the question, I think the lady's name was Nina, who asked the question, you know, she repeated the question. So it was very clear on the tape. So there was no question as to what his position was on what particular issue. So very clearly stated. This is in sharp contrast to what he's held in the past, as I mentioned. In 1994, he wrote to a constituent saying, "I will continue to abide by the same principle that has guided me throughout my 21 years in the Senate. Those of us who are opposed to abortion should not be compelled to pay for them." Then in 2007, Biden wrote in his book Promises to Keep, he said, I've stuck to my middle of the road position on abortion for more than 30 years. I still vote against partial birth abortion and federal funding. You're absolutely right. The Democratic Party is, I mean, they're, I would say, not on the edge. They're over the edge when it comes to this issue of life. And in my view, there's not another issue. I believe that there's a sharper contrast between the two parties than this one.
You know, Tony, one of the things you mentioned is his kind of, you pointed out his middle of the road thing. You said 2007, middle of the road now is a ticket to irrelevance in the current Democrat Party. There is no blue dog middle of the road like Joe used to be. And he realizes his desire to win is going to outrun his desire to be who he has been historically. So he's coming to face himself and look in the mirror, and he's actually showing his true colors, and that's running hard to the left. And one of the things we have asked all members of Congress to do is sign a discharge petition for those for the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act. Look, this is like in the case of a child surviving in the horrors of abortion. If a child does survive, then we simply ask that person be given protections as any other person should. And we can't get any Democrats to join in. It just shows you how extreme. There's maybe one Lipinski will occasionally join us. I've got to see where he is on this, but we can't get any of the Democrats in majority to even sign for protection for those who are born alive due to a botched abortion. And then this is something that we would suspect that even Joe Biden wouldn't support. We can't get Nancy Pelosi, who's now appearing to be moderate among her Democrats because of the radicalism. We can't even get her to support this. I've sent her a letter saying that. You mentioned that earlier. And we, Jody Heiss has led from Georgia, has led a discharge petition. We can't get any support from the Democrats on that either.
In fact, the discharge petition requiring 218 signatures currently stands at 200. Another 18 signatures required to force a vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which, as you said, I mean, that it isn't even really about abortion. It's about infanticide. It's about a baby that is born alive getting the treatment and aid that we would give to anyone. It's really shocking that we're at this point. And in fact, this has long been, the Hyde Amendment has long been a bipartisan issue. Going back to when Henry Hyde of Illinois added that to the annual appropriations bills to, you know, basically say, I mean, you don't force people to fund something that they're morally opposed to. But now in 2016, the Democratic Party, for the first time, writing into the party platform that they want to abolish the Hyde Amendment. That tells us a lot about where this Democratic Party is headed.
Yeah, we all were certain when the word came out from Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia when he made the horrible comment about what they would do when a botched abortion happened and there was a survivor, and he would make the child comfortable and then leave it up to the mother whether or not to kill the baby. And I think that's just a horrible decision. There's a life. There's another human being involved with the dignity of God here. The fingerprint of God on this child's life. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give it the respect and dignity this child deserves. And we thought surely he would be ousted from office. But it tells you a lot about part of our culture, not all of us, but the bifurcation here and the drift leftward, the drift towards, for many, for evil, and those who are still standing up for what's right. It's very sad, but there are many good people who are standing up for what's right. Unfortunately, we don't have enough when you have to have 218 votes.
Right. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Ted Budd of North Carolina, my guest, discussing the revelation, if you will, of Joe Biden now wanting to repeal the Hyde Amendment, which is the firewall between taxpayers and abortion. You know, you look at the Democratic Party platform, that's not all they want to do. They've made it very clear what they want to do, and they're pursuing it. They want to overturn federal and state laws and policies that impede a woman's access to abortion. I'm quoting directly from the party platform. And they said, we will continue to stand up to Republicans' efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. And, you know, it's, again, I've not seen in my 25 years being in the office and in the public policy realm, I've never seen a sharper contrast between the two parties on the issue of the sanctity of life and abortion than what we're seeing right now today.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it either. And, you know, I'm new at this whole political game. A longtime observer, but I got in here in 2016, sworn in 2017, but it's just been a race to the left. Look, we are for, as a Republican Party, we are for women's rights. We wore our yellow rose today. We celebrated in Statuary Hall the 100 years today. It happens, it's providential that we're on the phone together because we're celebrating 100 years of women's suffrage and women voting, and that passed 100 years ago in 1919 on May 21st. But when it comes to, so we are for women's rights and for freedoms, but when it comes to a second person involved, this second person, this child, deserves full rights. And that's where we differ because we see this as another person with dignity, and we need to treat him or her as such. And but yes, the woman has rights, but there's another person involved, and we need to consider their rights as well. So this my body, my rights is a false argument because there's a second person involved.
So, Congressman, we're about out of time, but how significant of an issue do you think this is going to be in the 2020 election, you know, for president? We saw Joe Biden backtracking on the Hyde Amendment, President Trump being very clear on where he stands on life. So do you think this is going to be a big issue?
Absolutely, I do. And I think it will be very, very clear to the voters the difference between the two. Now, there may be some blue-collar issue overlap between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. But President Trump is committed to veto any legislation that weakens current pro-life federal policies and laws. So we should be seeing a clear difference between the two.
I would agree with you. I think you're absolutely right. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. Always good to have you on the program, Ted.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Congressman Ted Budd of North Carolina, a True Blue recipient. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, a disturbing trend on college campuses. Free speech barely eking out over what is claimed to be a desire to have a welcoming, inclusive environment. We'll talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, it was as we were talking with Congressman Ted, we were discussing, Ted Budd, we were discussing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. We are right just under 45,000 of the thermal baby hats. We're going to send 90,000 to Nancy Pelosi since she doesn't seem to be getting the message that the American people want Congress to end infanticide. We're at 44,823. You can put us over the 45,000 mark right there at halfway. You can do that. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Join the effort to end birthday abortion. Go to TonyPerkins.com. It's at the top of the page. All right. A new report has revealed that support for the First Amendment among college students seems to be decreasing, as just over half of students believe speech rights should take priority over the right not to be offended. Now, this was conducted by the Knight Foundation, and it's certainly not a conservative entity, but the survey reveals that just 53% of students say that protecting free speech rights is the more important value, while nearly 46%, almost as many, say that the more important goal is to promote an inclusive and welcoming society. Joining me now to discuss this, Nico Perino. He's the communications director for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, known as FIRE. Nico, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me.
You know, I know you track this. You're very active on what's happening, on college campuses and elsewhere. Were you surprised by this, the outcome of this most recent survey?
You know, I wish I could say I was, but FIRE has been doing surveys of student attitudes about free speech and religious liberty and free association on college campuses for a long time. And one of the things that you find in doing those surveys is that students are supportive of these rights in principle. But then once you start asking more inquisitive questions, that support seems to fall off. So, for example, students will say they support the right to free speech, but then if you ask them if they support the right to, you know, offensive political opinions, that support starts to fall off precipitously. And one of the most astounding things in this survey that actually did surprise me is that we're seeing a rise in student support for violent protest against speakers. So The Knight Foundation with Gallup did a survey in 2017 that found that 10% of students sometimes or always think that violence can be an acceptable means to stop a speech or a protest rally. That's 10% only 2 years ago. Last year, it was up to 16%. And you're seeing it across the board. You know, can you disrupt a speaker using nonviolent means? That's also up from 2 years ago. And we're seeing this anecdotally on college campuses where students are or hecklers are coming with cowbells to disrupt a conservative speaker, or they're stacking chairs at Beloit College in Wisconsin to prevent the former founder of Blackwater from speaking there. So it's really a troubling trend, a rise of illiberalism in like the old school sense, where we seek out people with whom we disagree and debate them on the merits of their ideas rather than shutting them down with violence and force.
Yeah, it's one thing to, you know, disagree, but to refuse to allow other people to speak, and as you said, engaging in protest, shouting down speakers, even using violence, it seems to be growing in its commonality on these and the frequency on these college campuses. Let me ask you this question, because definitions, you know, words have meaning, and one of the things is at the center of this is what they call offensive language and hate speech. And in this particular survey, I'm going to use the definition that they had. Most college students agree that hate speech, defined as, quote, attacks on people based on their race, religion, gender identity, or sexual orientation, ought to be protected by the First Amendment. Nearly 6 in 10 college students believe that such speech should be protected, while 41% disagree. Now, when you talk about hate speech and they talk about attacks on people, is that just disagreeing with people, or is that threatening physical violence?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, is that hate speech is a vague, ambiguous, broad term that, you know, depending on who's applying a hate speech standard, can be unwielded and hypocritical ways. I mean, there's a reason that the Supreme Court, for example, has never outlined a hate speech exception to the First Amendment. It's just because who gets to define it? If you look at countries like Turkey or Russia, where hate speech codes exist and are enforced by people like Erdogan or Putin, they're not enforced in the liberal way that you would hope they would be. So here in America, recognizing that broad and vague terms or definitions can be wielded by tyrants to shut down political dissidents or even just political minorities, we haven't accepted that sort of exception to the First Amendment.
But isn't that in effect what's happening on college campuses?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly what's happening on college campuses. I think you're having a crisis of tolerance, a crisis whereby people are fighting out their disagreements with sit-ins or cowbells, or in one case at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, actually spraying a conservative speaker with a chemical meant to mimic bleach. Like, I think it's Sigmund Freud, for all of his faults, who once said that civilization was created the first day that man cast a word instead of a stone. You know, what civilization is tenuous, and it depends on us leaving our weapons, so to speak, at the door. But right. Unfortunately, college students in many cases are picking up those weapons, and as we saw at the University of California, Berkeley, setting bonfires, or as we saw at Middlebury, sending people to the hospital with whiplash because they right. don't like Charles Murray speaking on campus. It's ridiculous, and it's a threat, I mean, in some ways, not to sound hyperbolic, but to this tenuous civilization of tolerance that we've set up here, whereby people can have differing religious beliefs, differing political beliefs, and we all understand that we don't mediate those differences with violence.
Nico, we're up against a break. Can you stick around for a couple of minutes on the other side
sure
of the break?
Sure can.
Yeah, I want to continue this because I actually want to put the question out that they asked in the survey, because I think the question itself is quite interesting. So, folks, stick around. Nico Perino, Communications Director for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, is going to stick with me. We're going to continue our discussion on this just-released survey from college campuses on the issue of the freedom of speech and what place it holds in terms of the value that students place on it. We're going to continue that conversation on the other side of the break, and then later we're going to take your phone calls. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Thank you.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins. Nico Perino, my guest, communications director for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, also known as FIRE, discussing a survey from college campuses just released by College Pulse and the Knight Foundation. It was a look at free expression on college campuses. Nico, before I want to kind of analyze the question that they asked, but before that, one thing that did surprise me. Somewhat surprised me, is the declining trust in the media that's even present on college campuses, dropping almost 10% from last year. In 2017, half college students said they trusted the media to report the news accurately and fairly. That's down to a little under 40% this year. So even the media is losing traction on college campuses.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time I've kind of seen survey results that point to that, but it's not surprising. I mean, we are seeing a declining trust in many of our institutions here in America. There was just a survey out, I think, 2 years ago that found a precipitous decline in trusting of higher education itself. I mean, conservatives especially do not trust higher education. And so I think that what you're seeing with the larger news media in general is part of a broader trend of distrust of our core institutions here in America.
Yeah, and you rightly point out, like with higher education, there's a difference between Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal. In this survey of students, a majority, 58% of college students who identify as Democrats say they have a great deal or fair amount of confidence in the media, where only 24% of college Republicans who identify as Republicans say the same. So there clearly is a difference based upon your political identification or philosophical orientation. Now, here's what I want to – the question. This is one of the questions they asked as we were discussing about whether or not free speech rights should win out over promoting an inclusive society. Here was the question. If you had to choose – which do you think is more important, promoting an inclusive society that is welcoming to diverse groups or protecting citizens' free speech rights? I mean, on its face, if you look at this, how can you say I'm for promoting an inclusive society while at the same time excluding people's views you disagree with?
Again, you hit the nail right on top of the head. You're asking a question that's setting people up to choose between a false dichotomy. I mean, free speech is what allows us to have a tolerant society. It allows us to be who we are and to speak our minds, and it allows for the sort of diversity that many within our society praise. I mean, if you allow for censorship, you are censoring a lot of the diversity and a lot of the differing opinions that make our society so rich. Now, maybe what they're trying to get at in asking that question is not so much diversity of opinion, but rather the less important, more superficial diversity of melanin or sexual orientation. But it's hard to say. You're just setting students up to choose between a false dichotomy. And I think only in a free society where you allow people to be who they are and speak their minds can you have the sort of rich diversity that many within the academy and outside the academy hope to have.
Nico, when you look at these trends on college campuses as it applies to the First Amendment, are you concerned about, I mean, because the college campuses are kind of a micro, it's kind of a micro vision of the world where 20 years from now, that's going to be, in many cases, if history repeats itself or continues as it has, it's going to be the macro vision of what free speech would be like.
So let me answer this in a couple ways. The first way is when we first started doing this work at FIRE, when I first started doing this work at FIRE a decade ago, students were our best constituency for free speech on campus. Often the sort of censorship you saw happening were low-level administrators trying to exert power over their many fiefdoms, free speech zones, excessive security fees, things of that nature. But only recently have we started to see the students become the censors, engaging in mob censorship and hecklers, vetoes, even violence. So this is a worrying trend to me. But, you know, there is still a constituency on campus for free speech. We hear from them every day at FIRE. But there is a vocal minority, I believe, maybe between, you know, 1 to 6%, who are setting the tones on college campuses, who are infiltrating faculty meetings at Williams College, for example, and forcing professors to express their privilege before they can even speak, sort of like little mini Maoist struggle sessions at Williams College. That is concerning because what they do in doing this is they use the arguments that you are creating trauma for them, that you are using violence for them by not reinforcing their grievances. And if you're a person of sympathy, you don't want to dismiss that someone feels hurt or traumatized or even dismiss the idea that they feel like there's a violent action against them because you're an empathetic person. So they've built this sort of perfect rhetorical fortress for themselves, some of these minority activist students, that prevents us from even making the free speech argument. And it's very concerning to me, and I just hope that the vocal or maybe silent majority becomes the vocal majority in pushing back against some of these illiberal trends.
Well, Nico, we're up against another break, but I want to thank you for coming on. And I want to continue this conversation another time because I want to pick your brain on why you think that change has taken place, where college campuses used to be agitating for more speech, now less speech. What was behind that? We got to have that conversation in the near future. Nico, thanks so much for coming on today.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
All right. Nico Perino, Communication Director for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And it's fascinating. All right, we're going to continue that conversation, and we're going to go to the phone lines. Here's what I want to talk about. Well, hold on. I'll give it to you on the other side of the break. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, a couple more aspects of this that I want to talk about, and I'm going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. And I'm just going to put kind of the same question they put forth in this college survey. And by the way, if you're a college student, let Bobby know because we're going to put you to the head of the line here. But what do you think is more important? Promoting an inclusive society that where no one is offended, or protecting citizens' free speech rights. I took a little liberty there with the wording of the question, but essentially that's what it is. Their wording was promoting an inclusive society that is welcoming to diverse groups. Well, you can't have an inclusive society if you're going to exclude people. So what they want to do, they either want to protect people's feelings or protect free speech. Speech is essential. The freedom of speech is essential. So what do you think? Give me a call, 866-372-7234. And again, if you're a college student, let Bobby know. We'll put you to the head of the line. All right, here's another aspect of this I thought was very interesting. Not only was there the breakdown between Republican, Democrat, male, female, heterosexual, homosexual, all these different, gender fluid, all this stuff. Anyway, but there was also they broke this down by Christian, non-Christian students. It was very interesting. There is and this is a part of the diversity versus inclusive, diversity and inclusivity versus free speech. There's a stark divide. I'm quoting from the actual survey. There is a stark divide between Christian and non-Christian students. A majority Mormon, 81%, white evangelical Protestant, 71%, white mainline Protestant, 64%, and Catholic students, 62%, say that protecting free speech is more important than promoting inclusivity. That's interesting. You know, Christianity is the most liberal worldview in the classical sense, as it extends and defends liberty for all people. Now, and when you look at the religious divide, it's evident among students of their racial and ethnic background. However, again, it says it's most pronounced among white students. More than two-thirds, 68% of white non-Hispanic students say it's more important to protect free speech rights than promoting an inclusive society. In contrast, fewer than half, 49% of white students who do not belong to a Christian denomination say protecting free speech should be the priority. It's very interesting. You see, Christianity is, again, it's in a classical sense of the word liberal, is it extends and defends liberty for all people. And it's secure in defending its beliefs. You know, we're not afraid to be challenged. And that's a part of this. In fact, if you look at students based upon their sexual orientation, I mean, it's almost the polar opposite. They want to shut down free speech, the vast majority. Why? Because, well, they can't defend their beliefs, their proclamations, and so they want to cut off all discussion and they want to silence people. And that's very dangerous. But it's not new. It's not new. I mean, in fact, you go back to the Old Testament in Isaiah. This was cyclical. You heard it happened quite a bit. Jeremiah talked about it. Isaiah talked about it. Micah. The prophets, the people told the prophets, don't prophesy to us right things. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. If there was a speech code in the Old Testament, they would have been applying it to the prophets. And that's really what the role of the church is today, not from a standpoint of, you know, we talk about prophecy, we often think of predicting the future. A prophet also spoke truth and challenged the people to live according to that truth. And if in this, the role that the church plays is a prophetic voice to the culture, proclaiming truth, but increasingly people don't want to hear it. And so they want to silence the voices that would claim that there is objective, transcendent truth. That's why these things have to be they have to be resisted, because right behind this is the ability to proclaim the gospel. It's truth. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Laura in Arkansas. Laura, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Hello. Hope your day is going well. I have a particular instance of this past semester. I go to college in Texas. I'm a vocal major there, and we had a program introduced to us that celebrated homosexuality. And a few students and I chose not to participate because it goes against our religious beliefs. And we were given the choice of participate or fail. So we all ended up dropping the class, and luckily that didn't go against our record, but it just, there were no options. There was no opportunity to fight for ourselves. It just felt like I was being stomped on the entire time. So,
what college you go to? What university?
Texas A&M Commerce.
Okay. So it's, obviously you feel like then your views there on college campuses are somewhat stifled if you are forced to go through these courses and given no options.
Right. Yes, and there was no defense. There was no alternative assignment. It was, you must agree with this or you pay the consequences.
Now, did you take that to your counselor, to your advisor, or anybody, or did it just stop there?
Well, we spoke to the dean of students. We spoke to the provost. It just ultimately ended up being, well, this, you didn't participate in it, so you didn't get the attendance grade, so you fail. But there were no other options presented. Yeah. So it is a serious, serious issue. And it was very hard to be vocal about it because it is like at every turn our voices were just muted.
So do you, I guess I'm asking a rhetorical question based on what you said, but I mean, do you Many of the students in this survey said that they feel that they cannot speak up because they will be, and it's not so much that there are rules against it, but it's basically just because of the culture that's been created on the college campus.
Oh, for sure, yes. There were a group, it was a group of nine of us, and immediately after we made that decision, it was almost like we were excommunicated from the department, from the students, because they knew that we were dissenting, and they knew us before, but it's like all respect for us was gone after we had our opposition to it.
So, Laura, let me ask you, did any other student step forward after the group of you took a stand?
Yes, there were a couple. There were eight of us, or no, seven of us to start originally, and then two joined after that. But it was just the nine of us out of about 100 people involved in the choir.
Well, you know, actually, that's not bad. The fact that you had about 10% step forward, kind of a remnant. But Laura, let me commend you for stepping forward and not shrinking back and allowing your voice to be lost in this. I think we have a place to be respectful, to speak truth, but not. We just cannot capitulate when it comes to these core issues that they're white and black. It's light and darkness.
Right, and I mourn because I wonder if it had been somebody else, if it were somebody else disagreeing for some other reason, what would the results have been for them? But specifically because it is a Christian group of students who are opposing this one certain issue, I have to wonder, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It is this one issue, but it is the issue of the hour. Laura, thanks so much for calling and sharing that with us. We appreciate you doing that and appreciate you taking a stand as well. You know, this is I'm thankful. I really am. I mean, we had David on yesterday, a Musselman from Taylor University in Indiana, which is an evangelical college, who was talking about the protest against Mike Pence coming in, but Texas A&M, a secular college there in Texas. I'm grateful for those Christian students on campuses across the country that are willing to stand up for their faith. Of course, this is what Jesus said when he challenged people to follow him. He said, look, you know, deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me. There is a price to be paid. But when we are willing to step up and follow and take the ridicule, the scorn, you know, others take note of that, oftentimes silently. They're not going to necessarily say anything, but it's going to cause them to wonder, why would someone face the hostility, the ridicule, the scorn, and in this case, you know, being basically kicked out of the class? Why would you do that unless it's something that you really believe? And in this world in which we live, where everything in this postmodern world is, you know, relative, people take note of those who live with conviction, who live according to a transcendent code of truth. And it causes them to, you know, look internally sometimes and question. I've seen it. I've had those people ask me those questions. And that's a part of that process and that journey that people are on, and it's a part of our witness as Christians. It's not always just, you know, sharing the gospel. One is they look at our lives and they see that there's something different about us, which opens the door for us then to share the gospel. So I'm grateful for those college students that are willing to stand for truth, because it is becoming a very, very difficult environment. All right, you're going to take another call or two, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Mr. Perkins. Thanks for all you do. I just wanted to, you know, reinforce that these liberal campuses have been around since the early 80s. I remember clear back when I was in college, I was a naive 18, 19-year-old kid, didn't even realize I was being indoctrinated, but one of our classes, the professor was, it was not common knowledge if you wrote a paper that was pro-abortion, you get an A or B on the paper. If you wrote a paper that was anti-abortion, you get a C or a D on the paper. And that, so that was common knowledge from previous people who passed that down. I was, I said, young and I, you know, young, stupid, naive, and just trying to make the sports team and stay eligible. And I didn't even realize until I got older that, you know, what type of indoctrination I'd been through. But it's been around since the early 80s and in the Cleveland, Ohio area.
Yeah. It's true. Sometimes you don't actually recognize it. You just, it's on you before you know it. Joe, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. I recall some of that. It's interesting, the turn, and I think it's been in the last 15 years, last 10 years in particular, primarily after the Obama years, especially on the issue of human sexuality. I did my undergraduate at Liberty University, Christian University, never an issue there, but my graduate work was at LSU. And I actually worked on it later when I was actually in the legislature. Following that, because, you know, I was in the legislature and then headed up a public policy organization, I would go once a year in the graduate course in public administration, they would have previous graduates come in and lecture. And I did that for a couple of years. And then actually the last time, there was a protest on campus when I lectured because of my views on marriage. You know, just the same views that Barack Obama had when he ran for office. But as he began to push his agenda, and this is what we've seen, this radical change on college campuses, and I think the increasing push and trend toward violence and toward shouting people down, not wanting to hear counter voices on this. And again, I think it's because people don't want to be challenged that what they're pursuing, what they're embracing is unnatural. Certainly no historical record for it, no biblical foundation for it. And so, yes, no discussion, just shutting it off. And, of course, that was the last time I was invited to speak on the campus. I how do we push back? I think we speak up, and we realize that there's a cost. There can be a cost associated with it, but we cannot be afraid. We have to be bold, courageous, speaking out of redemptive heart, wanting people to come to a knowledge of the truth, because the truth is what will set them free. But if we shrink back out of fear and don't speak it, how will they come to know it? All right, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found at Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.